Welcome to Sci-Fi on Screen, the podcast that goes where no podcast has gone before. We here at Sci-Fi on Screen take a deep, close look at your favorite genre movies of science fiction, horror, fantasy, and comic book land. We go deep, scene by scene. We do comparisons of originals and remakes, and special shows. Just ahead, a new episode. And thanks for listening. Welcome back to another episode. This week, we're going to be talking about the 2000 Wuxia martial arts film called Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And I'm recording it because, number one, I consider it a fantasy film, so it fits in my podcast take. And number two, that the sequel is released on Netflix today, called Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny. So I thought I would review the original in preparation for seeing the sequel. But before we get into that, I'd like to do some feedback. I've got a little bit of feedback today. I wanted to thank Kieran Swain, who commented basically on Twitter about my It Follows podcast, that he wound up watching the film per my recommendation and really liked it. So glad to hear that, Kieran. I want to thank my retweeters of certain shows, It Follows and the SF Chamber piece. Again, thanks to Kieran Swain for retweeting those. Thanks to Hedge984, Kieran Swain, and Chris Guinard for retweeting Alien Resurrection. And I want to thank some folks on Reddit from the subreddit LV426, which, if you don't know what that means, go look it up. If you're an Alien fan, you do. I wanted to thank Secret Kitty, who wrote, quote, good stuff, a few minor critiques. Dr. Ren, who was attacked by Ripley 8, is the chief medical officer, not Dr. Gedeman's assistant. And it's General, not Captain Perez. So, Secret Kitty, thank you. Wanted to also thank Savlich, another responder on Reddit. Quote, was wondering when you would get around to doing this one. Looking forward to listening at work tomorrow. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Savlich. And I got an email from someone named Fleet, who's a longtime listener of the show. It was about the Sci-Fi Chamber piece episode I did. The email reads, quote, hello, Sci-Fi on Screen. I'm a big fan of the show. I've listened to most of the episodes and find them quite compelling. I wanted to leave some feedback for this episode. I'm sorry to say that I had mixed feelings. I enjoyed the exploration of thematic devices and the opportunity to hear about two films in one episode that did not come from the same franchise. I sorely missed the scene-by-scene commentary. Having not seen Ex Machina, I wasn't able to appreciate some of your ideas. This episode left me hungry, where others leave me satisfied whether I've seen the film or not. Thanks so much for doing what you do. I always look forward to a new episode each week. Quote. Thanks, Fleet, for the feedback. Yeah, I'm sorry you didn't get as much out of this one as the other ones. I do want to try a new format. I do want to start messing around with maybe not going, you know, completely scene by scene for every film, because I realize that, you know, I think I could do just as good of a show using my scene-by-scene analysis when it's necessary, but also, you know, truncating a little bit for brevity. So, sorry I didn't like it, but I do want to try new types of episodes from time to time just to shake things up. But I appreciate the feedback. All right, so there's not too much background on Crouching Tiger. I went to a couple of different sources. I didn't find a lot, but the film was originally written as a novel series by a guy named Wang Dulu in the late 1930s, believe it or not. And the film is adapted from the storyline of the fourth book in the series. It's a pentology, I guess a five-book series, and it's known in China as the Iron Crane Pentology by, Wuxia novelist Wang Dulu. So this film was directed by Ang Lee, who's a really interesting guy. He really directed a lot of different types of films. Before Crouching Tiger, he had directed Sense and Sensibility, The Ice Storm, Ride with the Devil, Hulk, and Brokeback Mountain. So quite a bunch of movies. Really interesting guy. And in 1999, a producer who had worked with him in the past, who'd been one of his early champions, invited him to make a movie based on traditional Chinese wuxia. And so, you know, Ang supposedly says this was a childhood dream of his to do. He assembled a team from the U.S., Taiwan, Hong Kong, Malaysia, and China to work on the film. He got famed fight choreographer Wen Wu-Ping to do it. We know him in the West as the guy who did The Matrix, but he's been in the wuxia and martial arts genre for decades. He's done almost all of the big, really big time martial arts films, and he is, you know, legendary at this point. And a bit about the genre. So wuxia films, they literally mean, wuxia means martial hero. So it's a genre of Chinese fiction concerning the adventures of martial artists in ancient China. It's traditionally a form of literature, but its popularity has caused it to spread to opera, film, television, and video games. So it's a big part of Chinese popular culture and Chinese-speaking communities all over the world as well. All right, so let's get to the film itself. The name Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon describes a place or situation that is full of unnoticeable masters. It's from a poem of the ancient Chinese poet Yu Xin. His dates are 513 to 581 AD. Part of the poem that it's taken from reads, quote, "Behind the rock in the dark probably hides a tiger, and in the coiling giant root resembles a crouching dragon," end quote. And the last character in Lo, who's the sort of the warlord, and Jen, who's, you know, one of the principal characters' names. In Lo's name, it means tiger, and the last character in Jen's name means dragon, respectively. So they are kind of representative of the two figures in the title. The film is set in the Qing Dynasty during the 43rd year, which Western times is basically 1779, around the formation of the United States, the reign of the Qulong Emperor. So we open in a small village compound. We're witnessing the arrival of Master Li Mubai, who's played by Hong Kong action superstar Chow Yun-fat, who's been in... He's literally, what they say is, he's the biggest star in the world because of the population of China. And just, you know, the Asian world, he is like the king of Asian movies. He's been in everything. And for us, we may know him in the West a little bit from John Woo's movies, The Killer. And I think he made another, Hard Boiled, I believe is the other one. Those are the ones that kind of made it. I think Tarantino was a big champion of those films when John Woo was just starting out. And also we meet the other principal character, Yu Shulian, played by another Hong Kong action star, Michelle Yao. Michelle Yao, I think, is originally from Malaysia. She was a pretty big star in her own right in Hong Kong action films of the 80s and 90s. I don't know how much now she's still working, but she was big time as well. So we start the film off, you know, Li Mubai was meditating in the mountains. They're both martial artists and they're kind of, you know, fighters for this. We don't know exactly who, but I think it's sort of the Wudang path and the sort of, you know, the way the Shaolin warriors were in most Chinese martial arts. This is the Wudang. So, you know, they kind of fight for this discipline. And the Shaolin, I believe, is the sort of the discipline that took place in the north of China. And most of the, like, martial arts films made in China and Hong Kong are, you know, the historical ones, mostly concern Shaolin. This is a rare one that actually concerns the southern style, which is this Wudang style. And they're very different fighting styles. Wudang is kind of marked by a slow movement and then really fast, sharp movements, where Shaolin is very acrobatic, very martial, you know, and more that we know in the West. So it's kind of cool in this movie that we see kind of a style that's not very often, you know, gets off of Chinese shores to be part of this movie, which is kind of neat. He talks about finding, he was basically away meditating in the mountains, and he's talking about how he found this deep, still inner place that his master never told him about, you know, I guess in his studies, but that it was, he reached this deep inner place and it was filled with nothing but profound sorrow, and he couldn't face it and broke off his training. And he says here that there was something pulling me back into the world, and he hints the line is something, quote, "something I'm not prepared to let go of," end quote. Already the charisma of Chow Yun-fat and Michelle Yao are such that we already get a sense that, you know, she's looking at him in a certain way that really we can tell that she's kind of smitten with him. And so we already get a sense of the chemistry between these two, and that he's hinting at that he feels the same, but it's very underplayed, which is great. The plot kind of starts off, Mubai is giving away his sword, the Green Destiny. He's kind of tired of the wandering fighter life, and he wants to give the sword away, and because it's brought him a lot of trouble. So he gives it to Shulian and asks her to take it to this gentleman named Sir Tay, who lives in Beijing. So then we cut, you know, to Beijing immediately. There's one really cool detail when Shulian rides through the main gate of Beijing, and that the cart she's in is riding in these deep ruts that have been driven into the stone by all the, you know, dozens and dozens of hundreds of carts that have come in and out of Beijing. I don't know. It's just, it's a goofy little detail, but I love it. I think it's so cool. And we get a lot of scene setting here, you know, the streets of Beijing in that time period. And the camera pans up and it takes in the whole Imperial Palace and the city. And it's really beautiful. Wonderful shot. So we get this wonderful scene now between Sir Tay, who's an older gentleman who's known Xu Lian in Mumbai for a long time. He's kind of giving her the business of, like, you know, he knows that they both care about each other and that they don't have the courage to kind of make their feelings known, or they, you know, they've been skirting around this their whole life. And Sir Tay basically gives it to Xu Lian, saying, like, hey, look, he's given up the sword, which is kind of a hint that he's giving up one, his old life for another, and that you should take this as a sign and make your move. She really says that, you know, neither one is really brave enough. They're the greatest warriors of their kind, but they're still afraid to declare their feelings openly to each other. Then we meet the third of the three main characters in this film, Jian Yu, played by Zhang Ziyi, or Zi Zhang. Sometimes I see Chinese names in America flip-flopped, and I never know exactly how to put the names in precedence, so admitting that right now for any Chinese out there. She's the daughter of a very prominent governor who's a visiting, like, aristocrat. So they meet briefly, and, you know, Xu Lian shows her the sword, the Green Destiny, and her eyes light up, of course. And she's, like, read all about her and Mumbai, and she knows all about their exploits. And they talk about that Jian is getting married soon, but she doesn't want to, that, you know, she's so excited by a fighter's life, and, you know, what is marriage going to be compared to that? So then we have our first action sequence, and it's done at night. A masked figure breaks into Sir Tay's house and steals the sword, the Green Destiny. And we start to get now the magical elements in this film, and we see the special powers that these Wudang-trained fighters have and how they can levitate and jump great distances. This is kind of the, you know, the wuxia element, as it were. It's really wonderful. And the fight starts on the ground, whereas this thief beats off kind of the local cops in the courtyard that have caught her coming out with the sword. We get the immediate, what characterized these fights is that this wonderful drumming plays underneath it. It adds so much to the fight. This composer, Tan Dun, who did the music in this film, which is beautiful. He's a Chinese composer of his own right. Like, he, you know, I think his stuff has been played by, you know, philharmonics in the States and in Europe. So he's, like, the real deal. His choice to, and obviously Ang Lee's too, to put drumming under these fights is so amazing. You know, it makes the fight very urgent. But because there's no tonality to the music, we're not cued emotionally by what's going on, you know? So there's not, until they interject a chord here and there at certain moments. So we're not, you know, we're not drenched in music telling us how to feel about the fight, which I love, you know? And so the fight's brief here, but like most of the fights, again, the camera stays back and doesn't cut a lot. And we get the full choreography. And that's the thing with wuxia and martial arts films. You're getting full choreography in the fight sequences. Rarely does the camera do a lot of blizzard cuts like, you know, American films do. They really stay back and they really choreograph the action. And this is where, you know, having a fight choreographer is, like, as important as the director in these kinds of films, because it's a good movie. I mean, this movie in particular is a really good movie, but, you know, you're coming to see the fights and the action as well. So, and it's interesting that, you know, in most films, I think modern action films, I might criticize kind of the dance-ishness of the fight sequences, not being hard-hitting, but the setting of wuxia films and the tone of these films is such that when the fighting starts and it's very, very, you know, dance-like, over-exaggerated, I don't mind it. Like, it really works because the film itself is a bit of a fantasy. So you don't mind that the fights are, you know, they're not always striking. If you really kind of slow the film down and look at it, you know, they're aiming over each other's heads and, you know, nothing is really like a killing blow. Usually it's done more for how it looks on the screen, but I don't care, you know, in this film. It's so beautiful that it doesn't matter. We can kind of tell, too, that it's young Jen behind the mask because her eyes and her stature, she's very slight, and she has very distinctive eyes, so it's pretty much a giveaway. And so Xu Lian now is in there, and she jumps out and chases this thief, and there's a brief skirmish between them standing on a roof, and Xu Lian remarks that the thief has been trained at Wudan, which is still a very special thing in this world. And then there's this wonderful rooftop chase. The light is, you know, because it's at night, so it's very, very dim, but we can see very well. So the palette of the cinematographer is really beautiful. and they leap from rooftop to rooftop and run up and down. The thing that I love here, and this is what I think Ang Lee added to the wuxia already, you know, wuxia has a definite style of camera work that you do when you do a wuxia film. There's certain ways you shoot things and how the camera moves, which he's obeying. And I'll get to that as I get into the movie more. But what he adds here is this: when they're having the chase on the rooftop, the camera's following them as if it's being carried by someone who can move like they move. It's phenomenal because you really are put in there. And again, anything that gives a sense of realism to fantasy elements in any kind of film, to me, always makes the thing that much more believable and that much more entertaining to watch. It's not obviously fake. It's, you know, it's fake, but with a realism and an attention to detail that make it just really astounding. So yeah, I really love this chase sequence. And there's also this really cool technique. Probably this is Yang Woping. Sometimes these fighters are down on the ground, and in order to get up to the rooftops, they run into these little alleys, and they go from like wall to wall as they slowly work their way up the wall and then back to the rooftop. It's so cool. There's one part where the camera focuses specifically on the footwork of the combatants, and so you see how the feet are moving and how they're striking each other and holding each other, which is awesome. And then, you know, you get the wuxia camera work, which is to, you know, do the fight from back a ways, like a medium or a long shot, so you get the full choreography. But when the camera goes up close, instead of cutting, the camera moves quickly with hand strikes. So if you're watching two combatants and you're really close, like a medium shot, when someone strikes, the camera follows that strike, and then the camera will follow the counter strike. And the camera kind of moves around to follow fists and legs without cutting. And it's, I always think it's great because, you know, it's very stylized. It's calling attention to itself. But at the same time, man, you're really in the fight without all these, this blizzard of editing, which is what we do here in the West. So I really love it. And Ang is like, he's mastered it already, like one movie, and he's totally got it down. He must have watched like hundreds and hundreds of hours of wuxia films, but he nails it. You know, it's really good. What's great, too, about this fight is, you know, sometimes these wuxia fights, we can't even tell who's winning. They're just kind of dancing around for like a half hour, and then it's over. But the way this fight is choreographed, we can see that Xu Lian continues to get the upper hand of this thief by knocking her down, grabbing her, pushing her back. But the thief continues to kind of just slip away and just barely, you know, remains out of reach and continues to be elusive. But as far as them going head-to-head, like Xu Lian is the, you know, the better fighter. And you can see that from the fight. You don't have to be told that, which is really awesome. So the fight ends. Some unknown assailant shoots a dart at Xu Lian, and as she intercepts it, the thief kind of gets away, and Xu Lian doesn't know who to chase first, and then they both get away, so it ends. But it's a really exciting, great first, you know, extended action sequence in this film. You know, first time I saw it, I remember after the scene was over, man, I was on board. Like, what am I witnessing? You know, it was really amazing. Then we have the next day. You know, they're all staying in this compound of this guy, Sir Tay. So Xu Lian goes to visit Jen. And we kind of get a sense that we know Jen was the thief. But we get a sense also because of the way it's shot and because of the actors that Xu Lian kind of suspects it's her. And she's watching her very closely. And they, you know, they sit for tea. And then, you know, they're getting very close. What I like about this too is that they may be battling at night, but Jen really has taken a shine to Xu Lian, and they're kind of getting close, and they keep saying, we're sisters now, we're sisters. We get a bit of the background as to what's standing in the way of Xu Lian and Mu Bai getting together, and basically the backstory is that Xu Lian was engaged to what they call a brother by oath, and I'm not really sure what that means, of Mu Bai's, and that person was killed defending Mu Bai. And so even though their feelings for each other grew after that, you know, very traditional Chinese society, like once she's been engaged, whatever happened to the husband, like she's kind of, that's it. They're expecting that was her husband one way or the other. And, you know, so Mu Ba doesn't want to move in and she's respectful of it as well. That's kind of the wall between them. Because of Zhang Ziyi and Michelle Yao, they're really terrific actors. Like we really see them bonding immediately. Like, I don't have to, it doesn't seem fake at all. Like, I really get it. Now we meet some side characters in the film. They're not too many, but there's a police inspector on the trail of the main antagonist in the film, a woman by the name of Jade Fox, who's sort of infamous. He killed Mu Bai's master, and she's still at large. So this police inspector, I think Jade Fox killed his wife, so he's on a mission to track her down and kill her. And along with them is the police inspector's daughter, one of Sir Tay's head guards, who is also after Jade Fox because he's sort of trying to track the sword down. So there's a party of three here. during the interchange between them, we see another dart that's shot into where they're having dinner, and it's an invitation to settle the matter sort of in this a place and time. So Jade Fox basically has said, you know, come to this place and we'll battle it out, and that'll be that. So now there's another night fight between Jade Fox and these three that we just met. And when we see Jade Fox is revealed, it's actually Jen's handmaid. So things are getting kind of complicated. And this fight isn't as well choreographed as the first one. I suspect it's because, you know, Jade Fox is played by an older Asian actress. And, you know, Michelle Yao is a Hong Kong action star in her own right. And Zhang Ziyi is extremely young and came from a dance background. So they were in a lot of the, you know, of the fighting, as well as their stunt doubles. But I don't, you know, this older woman, she's not going to be able to do a lot of the stunts. So the way they cut it was around, you know, so you don't see the face a lot because it's a stunt double. But I don't know, there's just something about it. They're using more cuts in this fight and it's just not as good. And it's interesting, part of the wuxia genre is that they do serious and comedy kind of side by side. So the thing that wuxia does also that's really interesting is they throw comedy in the fights. Like the fights can be in earnest and deadly, but they can also be kind of comedic as well. In this fight, even with Jade Fox, who's like the bad guy, like she's trying to only kill one person and not kill two others. And so, you know, some of the two other fighters, like the daughter of the police captain and Master Bo, are like not the greatest fighters. So she just keeps moving them out of the way, which is kind of fun as well. There's a fun move here where this has also been in other wuxia films where it's like an acupressure move to freeze the opponent. She's fighting Master Bo, Jade Fox, and so she wants to just immobilize him. So she reaches inside his guard, and like the camera follows her hand as it does all these like kind of complicated motions against his body. But when she's done, he's frozen. And like it's because she's like used acupressure to kind of freeze his. It's really cool. It's just like another cool part of wuxia, but I really like it. So the fight ends. She's about to kill the inspector when Mubai arrives, and he does like the reverse acupressure move. So Bo, the guy, comes back to, you know, back to life, which is kind of cool. And so now Jade Fox and Mubai fight, and it's a really good fight. You know, really, really cool. He disarms Jade Fox and is about to kill her when Jen arrives wielding Green Destiny. Now, briefly, Mubai and Jen are fighting, but during that time, Jade Fox actually kills the police inspector, which is, you know, again, we go from kind of quasi-comedic, and now we go back, and the inspector dies, and his daughter is there and crying. So, you know, pretty intense moment. And in the commotion of the death of the police inspector, Jade Fox and Jen vanish. So then we have this fun little moment where the next day, sitting at tea, Shulian is sitting with Jen and her mother. Shulian's kind of explaining to the mother, like, you know, if this person, we don't think whoever stole the sword is a bad person. If they would just return the sword, you know, we understand people make mistakes. You know, obviously it's all there for Jen to hear. Shulian kind of lets Jen know that she's onto her when she purposely drops a teacup lid. Jen's lightning fast reflexes catch it, and they both kind of look at each other. So Jen realizes that she's kind of been revealed in a way. It's a really great scene. That night, having heard Shulian, Jen attempts to return the sword, but Mubai intercepts her. He takes the sword from her and chases her. And then again, we get another rooftop chase sequence, which is amazing. Basically, this is the beginning of their relationship where Mubai now wants to train her. And they fight briefly, but she's absolutely no match for him at all. He doesn't harm her, but continues to explain, you know, he wants a worthy disciple to pass on his teachings to. But, you know, her character is just so fiercely defiant, which is her primary characteristic, that she will submit to no one at any time and winds up leaving. So then we get this confrontation between Jen and Jade Fox for real. Their relationship, which is really kind of complicated. When she returns, Jen kind of accuses her of killing the police inspector. Because Jen hasn't really stepped into that world yet. You know, she's very talented at the Wudang style, but she hasn't killed anyone. She hasn't bloodied her hands. So she still has some kind of sense of right and wrong. She's really angry with Jade Fox for doing that. And Jade Fox wants to train her continually. But now Jen admits to her that when Jade Fox killed Mubai's master, you know, she took the Wudang manual, which, you know, Jade Fox became very proficient in that style by studying it. But Jen studied it as well. And because Jade Fox was illiterate, Jen was able to learn more by reading the actual text besides looking at the inscriptions. And she surpassed her like years and years ago. At one point, Jen becomes very honest with her. She's like, I was scared to death that when I was 8 years old, I already knew more than you did, and I knew I was going to surpass you. But, like, you were my governess. And so she kneels down, like, humbly about it, and Jade Fox is, like, completely humiliated and winds up leaving her employ. So their relationship is pretty much severed. So, but it's really cool. I really like how complicated it was. Like, there's enmity, but Jen's still kind of subservient to her, and Jade Fox really loves her. And so it was just a good little complex scene. And then we have this great moment where Mubai is practicing in the courtyard, and Xu Lian is watching him with, like, the most doe eyes you've ever seen. Like, it's just, we can really tell she's just so in love with him. And Michelle Yao has her hair down in this scene, and my gosh, she's so beautiful. And it's great to watch Mubai practice because it's this Wudang style versus the Shaolin style, which we're used to seeing in these martial arts films. So, you know, there's slow kind of Tai Chi-like movements and then these fast strikes, and there's a lot of outflung arms and windmilling. Like, it's, you can definitely tell, even if you're not an expert, you can tell this Wudang style is definitely something apart from the Shaolin style that we see most of the time. So very cool to watch. And then there's a brief dialogue between the two of them where, you know, Mubai wants to train Jen, and Xu Lian's like, it's not our affair. Why don't we just leave it alone? And probably a little jealous of Mubai's attentions towards Jen. So kind of, you know, continuing in their relationship. So at night now, this bandit named Lo breaks into Jen's bedroom, asks her to leave with him. And so we realize they have some kind of prior relationship. They're all lovers. And then we get this extended flashback of what happened years ago and how they met. Jen was on this caravan out in the desert, and Lo and his group attack. Lo steals a comb kind of in jest, but, you know, Jen gets on a horse and basically chases him into the middle of the desert after her comb. She finds him in the bandit camp and, like, overpowers everyone in the camp and then continues to chase after him alone. And they continue to fight for hours until they both pass out exhausted. And then she wakes up in his cave, which is pretty cool cave. He's got, it's like fitted out with all the stuff that he's been stealing over the years. So kind of a sweet little pad. He hasn't molested her yet. During the fight, he's been very kind of teasing with her. So he's not really a hard-assed bad dude. Like, he's kind of a charming rogue, as it were. So he winds up feeding her, and she gets her strength back, and then she hits him with a rock, knocking him out, and heads out into the desert. She has no idea where she is, but she just keeps going as far as she can until she collapses. And then she wakes up again in Lo's cave because he's come out and gotten her, and he's tied her hands now. And this is a great, I think that one thing about the sequence that I like is that this is a real character builder for Jen. I mean, she's just a creature of pure will and pure pride. Like, she will not submit. She has this incredible energy. And this is what Mubai sees, that it wants to, he realizes that this power, this will of hers, unchecked or untrained, is going to get her into some horrible, horrible trouble. Trained, that she has this spirit that's just, you know, indomitable. That would be, she would be like, you know, an incredible, incredible warrior. We really see that here, that she's just, you know, indomitable, and it's really terrific. And Zhang Ziyi is great. I mean, she has a concentration and a focus about her performance that's, you really buy this character. I think this character could easily be an annoying character in the wrong hands, but I think Zhang Ziyi is something about her, as obstinate as she is, she's very charming. So then there's a fun bath scene where he urges her to take a bath, and he's going to sing while she's in the bath so she knows where he is at all times. So she smiles when he does it. So it's her first softening. And then later on, you know, he thinks that she's kind of relaxed a little bit, and she stabs him in the chest with a stick, and they wrestle around a bit. And then finally she relents, and they make love, her, and she's very willing about it. And then there's a whole montage of them, you know, in love and riding out together in the desert. And, you know, Lo doesn't want her to kind of just abscond from her life. And he says, I want to become someone who your family will respect. You go back to your life. I'll go and make a huge name for myself. And then I'll arrive and your family will approve of me. And, you know, we'll get married. And then we hear the first mention of the legend about the person who jumped off, this legendary figure who jumped off a mountain and made a wish. And the wish came true. So this will come into play at the end of the film when we're getting the setting of it here. So she leaves, and she gives him back the comb, which is kind of a nice bookend to the scene, telling him, when you're ready, you know, bring it with you. So then we shoot back to the present and our story at night. And at this point, Jen is rejecting him, saying that we're done, you know, please leave. He gives her the comb back and says, go. And we guess at this point that Jen is really, you know, she wants to become a fighter, and she wants to, you know, become like Xu Lian and not to be tied down to any man and live her own life. And she says that she wants to become, you know, this, what they call a Jianghu fighter. They mentioned it a couple times in the film, so I wanted to look it up And I found a cool definition online at this website, and so I just want to read it. So, you know, the type of fighter she wants to be is quote, this loosely knit brotherhood of martial artists, thieves, opera performers, monks, security guards, prostitutes, professional soldiers, and beggars, comprising a secret society, a shadow or dark mirror image of conventional society. Jiang Hu members recognized each other via a complex system of secret signs and signals. A newcomer visiting an inn, for example, could arrange chopsticks and teacup and a certain pattern on his tabletop if he wished to contract the local affiliates. Jiang Hu literally means rivers and lakes and refers to the itinerant status of many Jiang Hu members. Stories of the Jiang Hu emphasize the complex web of obligations and feuds that proliferated in the shadow world and were referred to as, quote, the love-hate relationships of the martial world, end quote. So I thought that was interesting. I just, you know, kind of found out a little bit about this subculture that we're kind of thrust into. Now there's Jen's about to attend her wedding ceremony, and she's in a wedding procession in this covered sort of palantir or whatever they call them. And Lo rides in by himself, protesting the whole thing, and he's surrounded by a bunch of fighters. But Mu Bai and Xu Len kind of secret him away, and they say, you know, if you really care about her, go to Wudang Mountain. We're going to sort her out, and we'll try to see if we can get you guys to be together, so on and so forth. So he goes, and then Mu Bai and Xu Len go back to Surtees, and of course, Green Destiny is missing again, and Jen is gone as well. She abdicated her wedding duties, so she's history. So now we get a brief sort of sojourn of Jen is traveling by herself. This is her first time alone, trying to be, you know, a Guanghu practitioner. And there's this one scene where she's sitting outside having tea, and these two Guanghu guys come up to her, and she kind of spurns them, and they get angry. And there's this motion where she's sitting down with a cup of tea. She unsheathes Green Destiny, slices both of their swords in half, resheathes it, and then like takes a sip of tea. Like, it's a great little kind of Western gunfighter moment, as it were. And they ask her if she studied under Mu Bai, and she's like, he's my defeated foe. So, you know, she's trying to make a name for herself. You know, in pursuit of her, but somewhere unknown right now, Mu Bai and Xu Lian have this wonderful moment where they start to come really close together with each other. And Mu Bai kind of declares himself for her, and he holds her hand, which is really sweet. And there's a brief foreshadowing of the end of the film, and he quotes this Taoist philosophy. He says, quote, there's nothing we can hold on to in this world. Only by letting go can we finally possess what is real, end quote. And, you know, so the title meaning comes to the fore, where he says, quote, crouching tigers and hidden dragons are in the underworld, but so are human feelings. Swords and knives harbor unknown perils, but so do human relationships, end quote. So film is definitely having some depth. You know, things are meaning two and three different things. There's some wonderful metaphors going on here. They're really drawing closer together, Mu Bai and Xu Lian, in this moment where you realize, like, all it would take is just kind of a resolving of a few problems, you know, and they're going to get together. But, you know, as we know, in most tragedies or, you know, films, rarely do these things work out. Anyway, it's very sweet. And then we cut to this great tea house fight scene. So Jen Good walks into a tea house on her own, puts her sword down, and orders a whole bunch of food. And the two fighters that she bested the day before come in with like a dozen of other Guanghu guys in the neighborhood. And so they have this long, protracted fight in the tea house, which is, again, as in kind of Wuxia style, it's a lot of fun. There's no one's killed. There's not a lot of blood. She's not trying to kill anyone. You know, she's trying to just kind of fight them off and make them look silly. And it's done in wonderful style. Like, it's definitely more from the Jackie Chan playbook. There's a lot of really fun moments of her, like, you know, knocking guys on the head with swords and her making fighters look clumsy and foolish because she's very slick and, you know, very good at what she does. So, and the music's very jaunty. So it's just a lot of fun. And at the very end, she's standing there alone, unmolested, and in the silence, like, there's a whole part of the tea house that collapses. So it's a great sequence. Just want to take a quick minute to let you know a couple of ways you can support Sci-Fi On Screen. One way is to use Patreon. Patreon is a crowdfunding site that works by allowing users to contribute on a show-by-show basis. All you do is choose a dollar amount you want to contribute, and every time one of my podcasts appears, you'll be debited the amount you choose. You can donate as little as $1 per show. That's $4 a month or $52 a year. No obligation, and you can cancel or adjust the rate at any time. And the best part is it keeps me honest. If there's no show, there's no charge. And it would help to defray hosting costs and for my time to put the shows together. The link is on my website, top right-hand corner, and signing up at Patreon is a snap by clicking on Become a Patron. There's also a great way as if you would like to buy the Blu-ray copies of any of the movies that I've reviewed on my podcast. Just simply go to the website, click on the movie page, and go ahead and click on the Blu-ray below the podcast, and it'll take you right to Amazon. If you purchase it, I get a few bucks from that as well. And I always appreciate it if you're on Twitter to retweet my podcast as they appear and spread the word. So then we have this wonderful fight between Jen and Shulian. So Mu Bai and Shulian are staying at what they call the Sun Security compound. I guess this group of people that they're affiliated with. And there's this, you know, there's this practice room inside of it that's just very high ceilings and lots of weapons all around. But so Jen comes openly now to visit Shulian, and she breaks down crying like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. You're my sister. And then she gets angry when she hears that Mu Bai and her have contacted Lo, and he's in Wudang Mountain. They're going to try to help her set this to rights and kind of be with Lo if that's what she wants. And all of a sudden, she gets frightfully angry, probably because they're still treating her like a non-Guang Ho fighter. Like they're still treating her like a child. I think she hates it. So she accuses them of like conspiring against her, and like fierce pride now wells up in her. She's just so full of anger and will. And so she declares herself Shulian's enemy. And at this point, Shulian has had it with her, and she explodes. And she's like, all of us, what we've been trying to do is protect your family, protect you, and help you. And you treated us all horribly with shame. You know, you should be ashamed of yourself. She's like, give me that sword. You don't deserve it. And she's like, take it from me. So now they clear the grounds, and we have this amazing duel between these two women. And it's amazing for so many reasons. First, you know, like I was saying earlier, the camera stays back to cover the action without cutting a lot, you know, and we get the camera off to the side. We get the camera overhead shooting directly down, getting these long shots that are really beautiful. Because of the properties of the Green Destiny, because it's magical, Shulian has to continually try new weapons to fight Jen, because the sword can magically pretty much cut through anything. And it gives Jen the edge to keep her from being overwhelmed by Shulian, which she almost always is. Like, she's not Shulian's equal here. So it's cool. So, you know, Shulian's constantly going back to the rack and grabbing, like, machetes, grabbing a spear, grabbing a sword. So we're getting sword versus spear, sword versus sword breaker, sword versus sword, sword versus, you know, other things, daggers, and so on and so forth, which keeps the fight very interesting and novel because there's always new weapons in play. So I love that about it. And the actresses are very acrobatic themselves. Like, they're both really terrific, as are their stunt doubles. And, you know, we get a lot of the Wuxi camera work where the camera is moving with the strikes, giving us this incredible sense of, you know, speed and motion, which is just so awesome. And we see in the fight that Jen keeps losing out to Shulian. She cannot beat her. But the sword gives her this advantage where she can continually hold Shulian at bay. And she kind of spits it back in Shulian's face, where Shulian's like, you're nothing without that sword. And she's like, yeah, well, I have it. So try and take it. So at the very end, Jen actually loses the fight. And Shulian places a broken sword right next to her neck. Doesn't kill her. And basically is like, you know, I could have killed you right now. Drop your sword. And instead, spitefully, Jen kind of reaches out with Green Destiny and stabs Shulian in the shoulder, which is a really dishonorable thing to do in that world. And at that moment, Mu Bai comes and he witnesses it, and he's like, you're not worthy of that sword, you know, drop it. And she bails. And then we get this wonderful treetop chase scene. This is like such the wuxia style, where they're both floating through the treetops, you know, chasing each other through the trees, and there's this beautiful flute music playing. It's a very gentle chase because Mu Bai is not going to hurt her, and she cannot get away from him. And this is, you know, it's a really beautiful scene. The trees are beautiful. There's very lush green. And there's a wonderful moment of them. They share this thin horizontal branch, and she can't knock him off of it. And he laughs and knocks her off completely. And again, he continues to offer to teach her. And she says, I'll agree, but only if you can take the sword from me in three moves. Of course, he does. And he says, now, you know, bow down before your master. And she refuses. And so he throws the Green Destiny down the sort of the water course, because he's like, you're not worth it. And this sword is going away because, you know, you have no humility. And she chases after it and nearly drowns trying to retrieve it. Jade Fox grabs her before Shulian can get there. So when he gets to where he thinks she should be, she's gone. But it was Jade Fox who's been following the motion. And now we're in Jade Fox's lair. She's basically drugging Jen with this thing that she's lit. Jen still has the sword. But at the same time, Jade Fox is still trying to ingratiate herself back to Jen, saying, you know, come on, it'll be you and me. They've all betrayed you. Let's, you know, let's go on. We'll be partners and you can teach me what you've learned and all that. So she winds up leaving and Jen is there drugged. Mubai arrives at the lair and with this special technique realizes she's drugged, you know, kind of dispels the poison with this move that he does. And then everyone returns. So now we have the big final showdown. Shulian and Master Bo arrive and Jade Fox comes. And there's this spectacular attack. Jade Fox has this blowgun that shoots like literally hundreds and hundreds of these tiny poison needles. Mubai blocks almost all of them with his sword. And they were aimed, basically we find out that Jade Fox was aiming them at Jen. Mubai gets in the way, he blocks them all, and then leaps and finally kills Jade Fox with the thrust of his sword. That's when Jade Fox admits in front of Jen that I was trying to kill her, not you. You don't know what poison is. Poison is an 8-year-old girl who's lying to you and keeping things from you, whatever. So she dies, but not before she points out to Mubai that one of her needles got through and is sticking in his neck. So all of a sudden, Shulian is not freaking out. It's Jen knows the poison, and it's basically Mubai has 2 hours to live. She also knows the antidote, but she has to go back to get the ingredients. So she leaves with Master Bo, and they head back to the compound to get the ingredients. But then you have this last scene between Mubai and Shulian, which is just heartbreaking. I mean, there's no other word for it. They kiss for the first time. It works so much because of the restraint between them for most of the film and just the magnetism of the actors. And you still got a sense that these two wanted to be together. And my God, it's so heartbreaking. We hear Tan Dun, the composer, his final theme starts to begin. And it's a very mournful, sad dirge. And as Mubai is dying, there's this beautiful line where he says, you know, I'm going to be drifting next to you as a ghost and you'll keep me from being a lonely spirit, which is just beautiful. And he dies. Very powerful moment. So when Master Bo and Jen return, they're too late and Jen kind of kneels down and Shulian takes Green Destiny and approaches her and you think she's going to kill her. And she goes to strike, but stops the strike right at her neck, gives the sword back to Master Bo and says, take this to Sirte. Then she approaches Jen and says, Lo, your lover is at Wudang Mountain. Go with him. Be happy. Make good choices, basically. You know, like she's completely free. Even though Jen is responsible, really, for Mubai's death, like Shulian's mercy is devastating, right? So, and we can tell that this breaks Jen completely. She's just, it breaks her. As she heads to Wudang, you know, there's wonderful, beautiful shots of the mountains and these long steps that lead up to the Wudang Temple. And she briefly reunites with Lo and they make love. But, you know, as they are having sex, we close in on Jen and she's crying. And we know that it's too late for them as well because she's been fatally infected now with this mercy. And she's crying. We know it's for Mubai, you know. The next morning, Lo wakes up and he finds the comb next to him. Jen is standing on this precipice about to leap off the top of the mountain, which leads back to this legend that Lo had taught her way back, that the person brave enough to leap off a mountain and make a wish, that wish will come true, although the person is never seen again. And so Jen has this wonderful leap into this beautiful fog that's crept up into the mountain. So she leaps right into the fog, and the camera starts to follow her down. The film ends, you know? So just this beautiful, beautiful ending, very ambiguous, but very beautiful. Pays off for me, you know? And we are out. So, you know, very, very brief summary for this film. I mean, I've kind of said all I need to say about it, but I think the emotional power that hits me at the end of the film is there because it slowly gained ground. You know, very slowly, this film has built, and built, and especially the bringing together of Mubai and Shulian, like how long it takes and how powerful they are, and just the tension that, you know, the tragedy, the end is so tragic. And the changing character of Jen, where she does the first selfless thing in her life, is to sacrifice herself in the chance that, you know, Mubai may be brought back. Like, it's so beautiful. I totally buy it. I buy all of it. I buy her character change and her arc. You know, I buy the love affair between the two principals, like all of it. It's really wonderful. So just a little bit of trivia about Crouching Tiger. The four main actors all spoke Mandarin in the film, but with different accents. So this is interesting. Chow Yun-fat has a Cantonese accent. Michelle Yao has a Malaysian/English accent. Zhang Ziyi has a Beijing accent. Chen Chang, I'm not sure who that person played, has a Taiwanese accent. But so because of the difficulty, some Chinese-speaking markets have the film redubbed with a better Mandarin because they didn't speak Mandarin very well. And even Chow Yun-fat had to do 28 takes of his first scene because he had such a difficult time speaking Mandarin. it's so difficult. So it's kind of weird how, you know, we know nothing of the gradations of this language in its native land, but there was such a fall off from how it should have been spoken that they needed to redub it for Chinese audiences, which is interesting. This is kind of funny. Taiwanese-born Hong Kong actress Ki Shu was originally cast in Zhang Ziyi's role of Jen, and she was out working on the film for several weeks until her agent pulled her from the movie to do a Pepsi commercial in Japan. So in the annals of, like, don't listen to your agent, this has got to be a topper. Michelle Yao tore her ACL during the shooting of an early fighting scene. It had to be flown to the U.S. for knee surgery. And then she returned to the set at different times to film non-action scenes until she had recovered. Jet Li actually was originally cast to play Li Mubai, but turned the part down to appear in Romeo Must Die. Oops. The role was next offered to Hong Kong singer-actor Leon Lai, but he too turned it down. And so Chow Yun-fat was the third, because Chow Yun-fat really isn't a martial arts actor. He's not, and I guess, you know, Ang Lee, rightly so, wanted a martial artist actor like Jet Li to fill the role. This was Chow Yun-fat, I think, his first, he's done a few since, but it was his first martial arts film. I'm recording this again, like I said earlier, today, because the sequel to this film has now come out today on February 26, 2016. It's called Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny. The only returning member is Michelle Yao, and she does play her character of Xu Lien. And they have a real martial arts style as her male counterpart, Donnie Yen, who's you know, a massive Hong Kong and Chinese martial arts star himself. I'm very curious as to what it's like. Depending on how good it is, I may cover it in a future episode of this podcast. If it's a clunker, I probably will not. But I'm anxious to you know, at least revisit the setting and one main character and see how they do. So anyway, that's all I have to say about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Thanks once again for listening to Sci-Fi on Screen, to my returning listeners and new listeners alike. If you like what you heard, head on over to iTunes and give us a review. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions about the show, you can send an email to scifionscreen@gmail.com. Or feel free to leave a comment on the website, www.scifionscreen.com, and you can leave a comment in the comments section of the show page. If you'd like to support scifionscreen.com, you can go to patreon.com/scifionscreen, and that's Patreon is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And to make it easy on yourself, there is a button on the webpage that you can click. Patreon is set up so you can pick an amount you want to contribute per episode, and it'll be recurring. If you'd like to do that, that is available. We'd appreciate all the support we can get. And you can find us, again, our website, www.scifionscreen.com. We have a Facebook page, and on any smartphone, you can search for us on the podcast app and subscribe. Thanks again. See you next time.